TSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg. All sports.
NFL is back.
All the time. A division of Bell Media. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on the official home of the Winnipeg Jets. TSN 1290.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us online at www.tsn.ca/Winnipeg, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day. The Jets, Tampa Bay Lightning, 6 o'clock puck drop tonight from the Tampa Bay Times Forum. I'm your host of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Drew Mundell, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. We have a jam-packed show for you this afternoon. Coming up at 1:30, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette is going to join us, talk about the firing of Pierre Gauthier as Canadiens general manager. At 2 o'clock, Craig Button, he's the TSN draft expert, he's going to join us to talk NHL entry draft. And at 2:30 this afternoon, Ken Daniels, play-by-play man of the Detroit Red Wings, is going to join us. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send us your tweets. If it's a good enough tweet, you might win a prize. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com. And, of course, our website is www.legalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Drew. I'm sitting beside the man who invented swagger, Richie P. It's good to be here on a nice Saturday afternoon once again. Ready to go.
That's funny because you're the man who invented stagger after last night.
Exactly. Yeah. Late night last night.
Yeah.
But up early and ready to go today.
Yeah, thankfully it was a 12 noon start time, so you're able to make it with some minutes to spare. Richie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew.
You're looking well.
Oh, thank you.
Decked out in Jets 1.0 colors, I must say, hat and T-shirt today.
That's true.
That's nice to see. We support the old team as much as you support the new team. Let's start with talking about last night in the NHL. We might as well start with the new Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
Went into Carolina, down 3-1. At one point in time,
yep,
managed to pull off a relatively exciting, for what is probably going to end up being a relatively meaningless game, a 4-3 Jets victory over the Carolina Hurricanes last night.
Yeah, and the Jets are all but eliminated. They are eliminated. I mean,
they're not officially.
Not officially, but they're eliminated from the playoffs, and it's quite obvious. And, in starting with last night, they have a 4-game road trip, Richie, and, really, the Winnipeg Jets have absolutely dominated the Hurricanes this year. That was Chris Mason's fourth win against the Hurricanes, and it was a gutsy effort. I mean, you've got Nikolai Antropov coming back from an injury. He contributed, and then once again you've got Kyle Wellwood getting that tying goal in the third period and setting a new career high for himself, which is really impressive. And again, Spencer Mrahacek getting on the board, and he just continues to get points. And It was an exciting game because, expectations now are completely changed. I mean, there's no hope of making the playoffs. It's not going to happen now. And Claude Dewell knows that. And right now what they're doing is they're trying to get wins and trying to see maybe, what guys are going to play themselves onto the team next year. There's not really much else you're playing for at this point. You're playing for your own pride and for next season. The season, as we know it, is coming to an end in a week.
Well, and we'll talk about should the Jets win games next segment, because I think, Richie, you'll probably have a strong opinion on that. But let's continue going around the NHL last night. Another game that had playoff ramifications in the Eastern Conference, that chase for the eighth playoff spot.
Mm-hmm.
Pittsburgh Penguins, 5. Buffalo Sabres, 3. Penguins just went into Buffalo, and they were the better team. I mean,
Penguins are absolutely stacked. Drew Crosby looks amazing right now. Malkin's been the MVP of the season. They stay completely healthy. Letang and everybody back and ready to go for the playoffs. It's going to be a war in that first round, and we'll talk about that eventually.
And thankfully for the Penguins, there's no chance they're going to face the New York Islanders.
That was a big win for the Penguins. They lost 2 games to the Islanders, and they didn't expect to lose those games. They were making a push for first place in the East, and it doesn't look like it's going to happen now because the Rangers look very good, and they're winning. But, hey, you know what? You're playing a good team in the Buffalo Sabres that need those points. That's a huge victory for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Just as big a victory for them as, the Capitals are going to need to hang on to eighth. So Pittsburgh right now, I mean, you can't argue with the offensive firepower they have. Crosby left the last game for one period, took a puck off the nose, comes back, and I think he has now 3 4-point games since he's come back. So
a,
I mean,
he had a goal and 3 assists last night.
He's absolutely taking control of a team that also has other guys that can take control of the game.
Well, that first round playoff matchup, which is more and more looking like it's going to be Pittsburgh versus Philly,
it is Stanley Cup final. Like yeah. In all honesty, that could be a great Stanley Cup final. Obviously, they're in the East, but I'm saying in terms of quality of teams,
or at the very least, the Eastern Conference final.
At least
probably the two best.
Two quality of teams. These teams can both make the final, and it's going to be an incredible playoff series. They've met many times in the past. I believe they met 2 consecutive years a few years back.
Richie, two teams that hate each other.
Yeah. You have Talbot switching teams. You have Laviolette and Bilsma. You have you have these two American coaches going at it.
This
you
year, the best first round matchup I think is going to be in the East.
Oh yeah,
it's not going to be in the West this year.
Like Crosby, Giroux, Malkin, Briere, Jagr with the Penguins, the Jagr Penguins factor.
Right. It would just be
the storylines are endless. Yeah. And for as a hockey fan, the quality of play will be second to none. Second to none.
New York Rangers took care of business to maintain atop the Eastern Conference. They beat the woeful Montreal Canadiens by a 4-1 margin.
All the Rangers are doing to teams like Winnipeg and the Rangers, they're just pushing and the teams are falling over. Yeah. And that's what you're supposed to do. You push and the teams fall over.
The better team should, yeah, exactly.
And those teams have nothing to play for. The Jets have nothing to play for. Montreal has nothing to play for. So when you give them you make it really hard for them. They give it up.
The number 3 seed in the Eastern Conference is going to be the Florida Panthers. They went into Columbus and lost 4-1 last night. The Florida Panthers are going to be hard fought against the New Jersey Devils in what is likely first round playoff.
And you know what? I think if we're talking about candidates for Southeast hasn't been a great division, obviously. It's been a very weak division. But if we're talking about candidates for the Jack Adams, I think it's pretty clear cut that it's Paul McClain, Ken Hitchcock, and Kevin Dineen as the 3 candidates. Because
mm-hmm.
Dineen, after that team took a little bit of a swoon, has made sure that they got back on track. He's a guy who was expected to be a coach in the National Hockey League years back and waited and bided his time. And some people thought he was unfairly overlooked for a number of positions. And he's made good on his first opportunity here. And, you have to give him kudos. They're going to win the division. And
they haven't ever really been challenged that severely.
Not really.
No.
Yeah.
You know, the Jets were at a point in time close to them and tied for it. But they
5
were,
games in
yeah,
hand.
Yeah, 5
that
games in hand, everything
ago.
Like that. Exactly. So, I mean, the kudos to Kevin Dineen. You know, the Florida Panthers, deserve to win the division. They've been the best team in the division all year.
Drew, I know we're, a week away or so away from our playoff preview show.
Yeah.
But, right now I'm looking at the one series that I know with all my heart that is going to be an upset, if you want to call it that. The Devils are beating the Panthers. I mean, kudos deserves to be placed on Kevin Dineen, because Florida was picked by everybody to be 4th or 5th in the Southeast Division, and he's done a great job, and he's gotten the most out of all of his players. But, I mean, the Florida Panthers would be in 7th place if it was based on strictly points.
Yeah,
and
the
New Jersey Devils.
The division's terrible. The Jets would be nowhere near playoff contention
right.
if they were playing in another harder division.
Right, exactly.
My point is that the Florida Panthers aren't, I would even argue, a top 6 team in the East.
With home ice in play there, I assume that odds for the Devils-Panthers series will be 50-50 because Florida has an extra game in hand and not at home.
I like those odds,
but I think
if you're betting.
Yeah.
One of the most impressive results from last night happened in Detroit, where the Nashville Predators went into Detroit. That's likely also to be a first-round matchup. Predators 4, Red Wings 1 last night in Detroit. We'll speak to Ken Daniels, Red Wings play-by-play man, a little bit later on in this program. That's going to be another doozy of a first-round matchup.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other great matchup. I think that the Philly-Pittsburgh one's a little bit better, mm-hmm. but that's the second-best matchup. And
that's
then
right.
if Chicago faces the Kings, that's a good matchup. But Detroit-Nashville is a better matchup than that. You have great coaches and Trotz and Babcock. You have great storylines. You have the Suter heading into free agency. Obviously, the Detroit Empire still hanging around, still looking terrific. Datsuk Lidstrom back now. So, and Nashville getting all the, the acquisitions. The last time Nashville loaded up with guys like Forsberg and that, they lost to San Jose in the first round. So there's that cloud over them a bit. There's a lot of storylines here from some of these series. I mean, there's going to be some tremendous series. I think one thing you're going to have is a top-heavy quality. As you're going to have, if say Phoenix and Dallas squeak in, those series won't have much in terms of storylines, but it'll be made up for in the tremendous storylines in the Philly, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Nashville, Chicago, LA, if that happens.
And you talk about Philly not wanting to play Pittsburgh, who's just been unbelievable in the second half. Nashville's not going to want to play Detroit, but you think about it from the perspective of Nashville manages to come out of that series, and we expect it's going to be a long series. We expect that series to go six or seven games. You come out of that series, now you've beat the Detroit Red Wings. Now, once again, the team that you got to beat is Vancouver. That's the team that they couldn't beat last year, but you beat Detroit in the first round. That's going to give them a huge boost of confidence up against Vancouver in second or third round.
You know, this morning I looked at the matchup. Say, just in theory, like I was breaking it down, say St. Louis wins and Chicago wins and Detroit wins and then Vancouver, and you're looking at Detroit, Vancouver, St. Louis, Chicago in the second. Those series are all tremendous.
Yeah, I mean,
you look at the East and then you have, you know, Boston, Rangers, one of Philly, Pittsburgh, and then even the Devils, they provide Kovalchuk and Parise. You're looking at some
top-end talent.
You're looking at some real nice matchups. So, you know, forget the Canadian element for a second. In terms of quality of hockey and play and the coaching, and it looks like, I think what you're going to see is a lot of the races and a lot of what people are focusing on now is the 7, 8, 9 teams. And let's be honest here. Those teams are nothing to write home about. And it's nice to be able to move your focus to better teams. Well, that are make it worthwhile.
In the NFL, they always say that the wild card round isn't great because those teams really, for the most part, you know, the best talent playoff series wise in the NFL is the divisional series,
right?
Where you know those teams are they've got rid of the teams that don't really belong there.
The bottom feeders.
And that's exactly the bottom feeders that squeak into the playoffs, and that's going to be similar in the NHL this year.
Giants, though.
Well, Giants, you know, exception.
Push yourself away from those teams.
That's right. In Calgary last night, just a woeful performance by the Flames on home ice.
Well, they're done. And you listen to the post-game interviews with Jerome Iginla and I think it was Chris Butler. They're done. And then they throw in the towel. And again, I mean, what Brent Sutter's done is he held them into it for a while. This team doesn't have a lot of talent. They're at a crossroads. And what are they going to do? And it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, that's right. It was Colorado 4, Calgary 1, the second straight home loss for the Flames on home ice.
And Colorado's giving it a nice run here, guys. I don't think they're going to make it either because they only have two games left.
Yeah.
But having said that, they've stayed in it a heck of a lot longer than I thought they would. Varlamov really played well. Landeskog is as good of a young player as we've seen in Winnipeg this year. Still have Stasny. They have Deshane, Ryan O'Reilly. It's a bright future there. Eric Johnson. It's a bright future.
That's right, and it's good for these guys to have a taste of a playoff race, so they know what it takes to actually get over that hump for future years. In Edmonton, that season can end soon enough for the Oilers. Los Angeles 4, Edmonton 1. Los Angeles going to be without Jeff Carter for the remainder of the regular season.
That's not good. And you know, just quickly, you know, that win is obviously huge. You know, they're in third place for now. The LA Kings have 4 games left, and you know, you've got Dallas just 1 point back, and you've got Phoenix 1 point back. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Richie, if you look at the schedules, we're going to get into this later.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this race is literally going to come down to the last few days. It's not right now. You can't say that anybody. And the thing is, San Jose right now is giving me no indication that they're going to, you know, just.
Well,
we'll
talk about the playoff races coming up in a few seconds.
I want to play that clip too.
Yeah, we'll play the clip of the San Jose Sharks commentators,
Drew Remenda, who's on the show last week.
That's right, Drew Remenda
and Randy Hahn called the games. And
Randy Hahn, a guy who's been on the show multiple
both
times,
have. And Drew Remenda and Ray Rado, who's a columnist with the, I think it's San Francisco Chronicle.
I believe so. Yeah,
is the columnist in that area, has been for many years. They got into a bit of an argument. I think Ratto made some comments about the team, and so it'll be interesting to hear that and hear what they have to say.
Richie, I think it will be absolutely catastrophic if they don't get in there.
Well, I think it'll result in some changes in San Jose,
big
for sure.
Big changes.
Catastrophic. We're talking about hockey here.
In the hockey context, the San Jose Sharks didn't expect to be fighting for the final playoff spot.
I think that's what the argument's over.
You didn't pick up Brent Burns and Marty Havlat to just squeak in. You picked up those guys to win the cup.
And that's what we asked Drew Remenda about last week. Final game last night, the Vancouver Canucks 5, Dallas Stars 2. Canucks, better team than the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, and they could match up in the first round here.
Yeah.
That'd be a nice.
Dallas is currently 7th in the Western Conference. Of course, things are probably going to change there, but they're running out of time to change things around in the Western Conference.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see that. And Vancouver demonstrated why they're the better team last night, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to shift our attention to the Winnipeg Jets. A little bit of a look back last night. Look forward to tonight in Tampa Bay. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290.
welcome back to the program here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is manning the Twitter feed on the other side of the glass. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
Drew, that's a really nice shirt that you're wearing. Is that cashmere?
It's not cashmere. Actually, it might be part cashmere. I'm not 100%
part
sure.
Part cashmere?
I think there's a little, there's a percentage of cashmere here. You know, now, I am wearing...
Is there a red dot?
There's no red dot. I'm wearing blue. I'm wearing UK blue for, of course, the Final Four UK Louisville matchup later on.
Go Kentucky.
This evening, exactly.
And I have to say that because Richie Hart and I are driving to Kentucky in 3 weeks, and if I don't cheer for Kentucky, clearly they won't let me in the state.
Louisville's in Kentucky, though.
It's true. Louisville is in Kentucky.
But Louisville... But we don't want Louisville to win.
No, we don't want Louisville
to win. We want UK to win.
We want UK to win.
Well, I'm in this Illegal Curve bracket thing.
Yeah.
I'm second.
Do you have Louisville?
No, I have Kentucky against Kansas in the final.
So you're likely to cheer for Kentucky and Kansas.
Apparently Kansas was a little bit of a dark horse. I just picked on based on nothing.
I believe you did your picks during the intermission of one of the Jets games.
That's right. You told me I had to do it before the beginning.
Kansas was a dark horse, and then of course UK was a light horse.
Wow. Anyways, let's leave it there. Anyways, cheer for Kentucky today in the March Madness against Louisville. If you do, maybe we'll invite you to the wedding.
Let's get back to hockey because I think a lot of people are turning off their radios right now.
Jets Lightning tonight in Tampa Bay. The Jets are not officially mathematically dead just yet, even though they are. I mean, it's going to take one victory by the either 3 points by the Sabres. Or one win by the Capitals.
Are you actually trying to seriously talk about the Jets' chances right now?
No, I'm not. I'm saying they're dead. Don't worry.
Okay. No.
Let me ask you this. Should the Jets lose the remaining games?
Well, yeah, should they? I mean, Drew, that question is complex in that, I mean, the players play to win. Does management probably want them to lose? Yeah, I would assume so. The higher draft pick you get, the better chance you have of getting a better player. In the future, this team needs better players. This team's system is pretty bad right now. Let's call a spade, in terms of system-wise, they're not that deep. They got the team from Atlanta, which was very poor in terms of prospects.
They've got to restock.
They got to restock and get a better player. You get a higher pick, you get a better player.
See,
so,
Rich.
I mean, I just, to win now, I mean, the players play to win. The coaches coach to win. But to win, if you're a fan, you'd rather them lose.
See, Richie,
because they get a better chance. Right now, again, I think they're going to have the 10th overall pick in the draft.
Right.
And you're not part of the lottery there. A 10th overall pick can definitely be a good player. A top 10 NHL pick can be a good player. But there's a drop-off from 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 to 10. I mean, that's just realistic.
And the way I look at it, the Jets are in 10th now. They're not going up. I mean, the Jets will finish at the highest. They'll finish 10th. That's just the way it's going to be. And then the lowest they're going to finish is... Maybe 12th, okay? But, you know, on this notion of should they win or should they lose, no NHL team ever goes out and purposely loses.
That's not the point.
Hold on.
The players play to win.
Hold on. I'm just saying that's not on the table. So, yes, would management maybe like them to finish a few spots higher? Why not? It doesn't matter at this point if you finish 10th or 12th. That you're not.
Yes, it does.
No, what I'm saying is as far as making the playoffs. So you're not going for the playoffs at this point. So yes, the management would prefer, Chevy would prefer a higher pick. Well, if it's
Let me ask this question. I mean, lots of the players are banged up nowadays, but we know that Dustin Byfuglien hasn't taken a morning skate and hasn't practiced in probably close to 3 weeks now.
Mm-hmm. And Drew, the fact every game is very impressive,
by
the way.
Should the team shut Dustin Byfuglien down?
Yeah.
Sure.
Do you think they will shut Dustin Byfuglien down?
I think so. Probably after this game.
Yeah, why not?
Once they're mathematically eliminated, quote-unquote, even though they basically are anyways, they'll shut Byfuglien down, I'd say.
Yeah, put Mark Flood in the lineup. Let Mark Flood, Randy Jones, let them play some games.
Well, maybe Randy Jones. You don't need Randy Jones. You know what Randy Jones is. You need to see more Mark Flood.
Okay, Mark Flood. Okay, so you put Mark Flood in. Absolutely, Drew. Why not? The only possible reason you would keep him in the lineup is if you were going for the playoffs, which they're obviously not. And He's clearly, you know, and I commend Dustin Byfuglien because I think that he's faced a lot of adversity, especially earlier on in the season. And, you know, he's top five in the league in defenseman points. He's been injured for a long time now, and he's been playing fairly well. Last game, last night versus the Hurricanes, he had some struggles. But, yeah, absolutely, get Mark Flood in the lineup. You know that the Jets management and coaching staff love Mark Flood. The only reason Mark Flood hasn't been playing more, it's been a numbers game.
Does the coaching staff love Mark Flood? Because if they did, wouldn't they have put him in there over Jones?
Well, this, I mean, we don't know the obviously we don't know the answer to that. I don't know how much they love him. I think they think he's a fine depth player, yeah. But I mean, yeah. That's what he is. I mean, let's be honest. Mark Flood is a.
No, I realize it, Drew. And yeah, he's a depth player. But I mean, this is the time of year when you want to see these depth players play. Yeah,
right. So you should be. You're right. So you should see him in the lineup.
Well, pretty clear. Grant Clitson is going to get a spot next year. So I mean, that doesn't bode well for Mark Flood, but. He'll get a one. He's earned a one-way contract.
Bufflin's out and let them both play.
Right.
Right. To see Randy Jones. You know what Randy Jones is.
Because yeah. Keep in mind, guys, Mark Flood was supposed to lead the St. John's Ice Caps this year. He was supposed to be. And he was playing
too
well.
Even a guy like Spencer Mihacek, you know, they're giving him opportunity. Give him more opportunity. See what.
Well, Spencer Mihacek's an interesting guy because you thought that they were going to. That the organization wanted to see him make the lineup out of training camp.
Yeah, I think so. It took a little more time, right. But he's played well since he got back up there. And they want him to be, at best, a third-line right winger or a fourth-line right winger is more maybe, you know, right. they're resigned to that kind of being the option. And then if a third-line right winger would make them very happy.
Yeah, and the thing is, he's versatile. You know what? Good for Spencer Mihacek. Like, at this point in the season... The Jets, the big negatives with the Winnipeg Jets this year has been their road victory. The one thing is they've been very bad on the road. And, you know, that's something that they've talked about for months now. And it's something they've tried to improve. And they got the big road victory last night. But that's something that you can't look back on the season and not look at the road victory. But when you look at guys like Spencer Mihacek who have come into the lineup and have done really well, even if it's in meaningless games, you know, that bodes well for the future. And like Richie said, this is a team that's going to have to build through the draft, and they're going to have to develop a guy like Mark Scheifele. You know, they're going to have to let him play another year in junior.
Telegan, Ewan, Lowry, yeah. All those guys need to become something.
Yeah, and they're at least a couple years away.
And yeah, of course. And it's about developing top-end talent because right. then you can retain the top-end talent. And it's controllable and it's cheap, and you have to be able to draft correctly and that's so important for a team like Winnipeg that doesn't spend a lot of money.
Right, and once again, I think that, you know, the draft coming up, the Jets are going to get a mid-pick. They'll probably get, right, 10 to 15 or something.
A 10 pick is good, but this is the problem, Izzy. The worry as a fan, to me, should be this. To be this middling team year after year.
And the Calgary Flames.
Right, and then you get to the 10 or 11, whatever spot, and Calgary's drafted poorly too, the 10 11. Sven Barchi looks good, but many other picks they've had have busted. But, you know, 10, 11, 8, 9, 10, 11, right around there. And you pick right around there for a couple of years in a row, and then the 3 to 5 year subscriptions come up, and you're not further down. You know, you're not as far ahead as you'd like to be.
Right, and that's
this
why,
is the time to build because you have everybody's money. They're locked in. You can do what you want. There's not, even if they don't like, they have a crazy waiting list. I talk to people on the streets, and they say, well, they know that you need to do this and that. They don't need to do anything. The tickets are sold. They can do what they want and spin it how they want to.
Right. And the thing is, right now,
The fans would clap if you score in your own net, for God's sake. That's what the fans are like right now. They're that happy.
The top two lines, I mean, if you look at the guys on the top two lines, the top guys on the top two lines, they've had their career years. Evander Kane has progressed. You can say Blake Wheeler has progressed.
Both have, for sure.
But this team is not going to win a playoff round if they do not have a number one center.
Yep, that's right.
And Chevy knows that. If he had Jonathan Toews, he would love it.
Sure.
So, I mean, when you're talking about what do you need to do and how are you really going to make a change, the most of the signings that Chevy has made have been excellent. I mean, I look at a Tanner Glass and a Kyle Wellwood or an Antti Miettinen. Well, I mean, the moves have been good.
You got to take it down a notch. I mean, I don't think anything he's done has been, aside from the fact that I would have sold more at the deadline, I don't think he's made any egregiously bad moves, but Miettinen move hasn't worked out, has he? Glass has been a good signing for sure.
These signings have no risk on them.
Exactly. 1 year deals for these guys. Now Wellwood, they signed. He's produced. Everybody says to me is he's produced really well based upon his salary, and he has. He really has. But to me, you know, using him in the second line right wing spot all year was exactly my concern. At the beginning of the year, are you signing a guy who might be better than a young player? But you're not giving the young player as much time, and then you end up finishing just below the playoffs, and he's played you into a worse spot, and you don't know
what the young player, how the young player would have developed had he had those minutes like Kyle Wellwood had.
It doesn't do any good. Like, there's nothing that comes of it, the Wellwood minutes, is what I'm saying, like in a long-term perspective. Because ideally, you want him on your fourth line.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's all I'm saying.
I mean, Kyle Wellwood is good for what he does. He stands beside the net. He's a nice playmaker.
He's a really good passer. He's got really good vision.
Yeah.
He can do all those things when he's got some time. He sees the ice very well.
But if this is a good team, Kyle Wellwood's nowhere near the top three lines.
That's right.
I mean, I know it's...
That's why he's available.
It's blunt.
That's why he's available in September.
Of course.
Nothing against him. The guy can play. He can play in the National Hockey League. But that's why he's available in September.
He can't play. He's not a top-line guy on a good team.
No, and, you know, yeah, exactly. And so, back to the side, you know, what Chevy did really well with the Oduya trade.
Absolutely.
But he's done really well with the Oduya trade. So far, it's been nothing to say that, you know, you're worried about Chevy's ability. He just hasn't done enough. Nothing significant. Nothing significant has happened yet. The most significant thing has been the draft, and we won't know about that for a while.
And that's what we'll have to see, and that'll make the 2012 draft all the more important as well, and that's why we're going to be joined by Craig Button later on in the program.
Every draft is of vital importance to this team, because if you don't draft well, you're the Atlanta Thrashers. You're what the team is right now.
Let's leave it there. When we come back, we're going to sort of take a longer-term view of the Winnipeg Jets on the next segment. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue, pizza baked, well done. That, of course, is going to be the location for Ezzy's playoff draft coming up on Monday, April the 9th. Is that right, Ezzy?
How many years have we been doing my hockey pool? I think it's like 15 years now.
It's been a long time. Yeah.
It's the same group
really?
Of guys.
We've been friends for I think we all need to reevaluate
something.
Yeah,
it's about 14, 15 years.
There's nothing that I love more, and I imagine I share that sentiment with a lot of Canadians. When the season ends and you have your hockey pool and the weather's nice, it's the best time of the year.
Otto just made 2-0.
I'd rather not. I'm trying to find a different group of people to have a hockey draft with.
Well, Drew, the players you know are only from 1998, so you're drafting like McGillney, Bure.
McGillney's a contract player.
Derek Plant.
Brett Hedekin.
Yeah, Derek Plant. Nice reference on Derek Plant there.
Donald Audette.
Yeah, thank you. Are you done? Anybody else you think that I've drafted? I think you forgot Cliff Ronning. I think I drafted Cliff Ronning.
You loved Cliff Ronning back in the day.
I drafted Cliff Ronning for a number of years in a row. Anyways, that's
another point for Erik Karlsson, who's been absolutely insane.
Well, he's just
I think you can crown him as the Norris winner.
You want to crown him?
I would say he's the Norris winner.
If it's just based on points.
It's him and Weber, I think, is the decision.
I mean, let me look.
All around. Remember what I said 2 weeks ago, though. It shouldn't just depend on points. And yeah. Shea Weber's a better all-around defenseman. Let's be honest.
But Karlsson's done things that people haven't done in years. This is a tough one for me. Because Karlsson isn't.
He's not atrocious in defense like Mike Green was when Mike Green was putting up points.
There's a lot of parts of the game that he just does that don't necessarily show up in the score sheet. But same, Weber is shut down defenseman who can score, slap shot on the power. I mean, if you're picking for one game, you're probably picking Shea Weber. Karlsson, they're both beauties to watch. I mean, I still have to give that one a little more thought. Not that I'm voting, but
and when you consider that, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere. He's 21 years old, and the points that he's put up, he's putting up numbers.
He's in the top 10 of NHL scoring, last I checked, and
right.
Nobody scores anymore. For a defenseman to be that high
this isn't
up,
the Paul Coffey era, right?
It's crazy. It's nuts.
Well, we saw him on, when did we see him, Monday night?
Worth the price of admission.
Yep. His vision is, who would you compare his vision to? I don't know who you compare his vision to.
It's a really good question.
It doesn't really matter who you compare his vision to. It's good vision, but...
Such a great skater, though, and so effortless in his ability to move that puck from one zone to another. Never mind the power play and the offensive zone, but everything he does is tremendous. Anyways,
let's get back to the Jets for another segment. Looking forward, this team... I mean, if you read today's Winnipeg Free Press, there's a comment in the article, you know, Tanner Glass is out for the year now. He broke his foot yesterday.
Yeah.
He had a great year for the Jets. I mean, you know, for the value what he did, I mean, he's playing... the GST line was playing as the third line for the bulk of the year.
Yep.
Not their fault. They should have been the fourth line, but whatever. That's just a comment on the talent the Jets had. If Chevy really did have offers for Tanner Glass at the deadline, and he didn't take them, is that a mistake on Kevin Cheveldayoff's part?
Well, the question is, if you re-sign those guys, I'm fine with it. The issue is if you had offers for guys and didn't re-sign them with thoughts that the playoffs were somewhat of a possibility, and then you're losing out on assets moving forward. I don't care if it's a fourth-round pick and you consider it a meaningless asset. Two fourths can be a third. I mean, at the end of the day, I think that the long-term picture should be the foremost concern for this organization. Now, so if you hold on to guys like that and Slater and they don't re-sign, then what were you thinking? In my opinion, that's the question. Now, it's not a colossal error. It's not trading Sagan and Dougie Hamilton for Kessel.
Right.
In reality, and a second-round pick for Kessel. But it's still a smaller thing that, you could improve slowly and surely. Gary alluded to Glass likely signing in the offseason. I'm fine with that. I like Glass. I think he should be re-signed. But I'm saying so long as you re-sign a guy, if you had an offer for him, it's fine. I don't know why you wouldn't. I'm assuming there's some talk by you. See, this is what we're not privy to. I'm assuming there's talk behind the scenes between the agent and the Jets management that they'll likely be able to hash something out, because if you're not totally sure, you talk before the deadline. And this brings us to Tobias Enstrom, right?
Well, Enstrom's going to be a UFA after next season.
After next season. We talked about this. You talked about this months ago.
Yeah, we speculated. We asked the question, should the Jets have traded him at the trade deadline or in that vicinity when his value was probably the highest?
Or the draft. And the question is, if you're not going to re-sign Enstrom for, after next season, then the draft is the place to deal him at the latest.
The draft this year. The draft latest, coming up in June.
Yes, the latest.
The problem I see...
Because the longer you hold on to him...
The less
you get back for him. If you hold on to him right up there's a huge bidding war at the deadline. Let's say like Paul Gostad got the Sabres a first round pick.
Enstrom's a different class though. It's not even close. I mean, in terms of quality of player.
But let's move on.
And when there's salary cap room as in the summer, as you know, that's when everybody can be a player.
He didn't get moved at the trade deadline. And like you said, he'll be a UFA at the end of next year.
Right.
And the problem, Drew, that I have with Tobias Enstrom is. And he's regressed in his point totals this year.
That's fine.
The problem that I have with Tobias Enstrom that's been clearly evident the entire year, he plays with Dustin Byfuglien. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of problems with bigger forwards. Mm-hmm. If you watch the team like we do, we've gone to every single game this year, every home game, and defensively, he struggles. And as a defensive defenseman, he's weak. And Tobias Enstrom is very good on the power play, and he's a terrific skater and all that. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the Jets moving forward, you've got Buff under contract, and you've got Bogosian under contract for one more year, but you have to look at if you have one defenseman that you're going to build your defense core around, it's going to be Bogosian.
Well, Bogosian isn't the puck mover that Enstrom is. I don't know if he will be. And Byfuglien, the question is, how long is he here for?
Well, he's under contract for a while longer.
Is he in the plans? And that's a question. And if he is, can you ever have too many puck movers? And that's a question too.
Toby Enstrom makes $3.75 million now.
Right.
What would he make on an open market if he goes to free agency, or if the Jets prevent him from going to unrestricted free agency? That means that they've backed the truck up, so to speak.
It's a good question.
Is he a $5 million a year defenseman?
Close to it, probably. I can't say.
I know you can't say. I'm not holding you to it. Is he worth $5 million? Because his skill set is not going to improve dramatically from what it currently is.
He is what he is.
He is what he is. I mean, how old is he now?
I think he's about 26 or 7.
So, I know defensemen mature later, but he's not going to improve dramatically when he's, at this point. He's 27 right now. Yeah. So when he reaches unrestricted free agency, he's going to be 28, 29.
The problem that I have, Drew, and I realize in today's NHL...
Because he turns 28 in 2012.
Mm-hmm. In today's NHL...
So he'll be 29 when he hits UFA.
When you've got basically the salary cap going up slightly, but you have the Jets who are going to be at the bottom of spending teams, or near the bottom, not right at the bottom, but let's just say even in the middle, I don't know if you can give Enstrom... $5 million when a guy like Shea Weber is getting $8 million or Ryan Suter is getting $8 million, you're basically saying...
And there's a huge wild card here, Izzy, and that's the CBA.
Sure.
Does that take the cap down? Does that change salaries? Can you sign up before that? Can you train before? There's so many issues.
And Richie, when you talk about the beginning of the year, when specifically you went over the salary cap situation for the Jets and the amount of money they had tied up, and Chevy's got good value out of trading Oduya, and then you've got Hainsey for one more year. But when you look at
Hainsey and Enstrom become UFAs at the same time,
right?
So that does free up some money for the
Bogosian's
Jets.
And RFA,
and Bogosian's an RFA at that same year as well. So the Jets, I mean, you're not going to keep all three of them, obviously.
Absolutely not.
But you know, you're freeing up. You have $10 million that comes off the books.
Yeah.
And so where do you allocate those $10 million that previously had been allocated to defense?
Well, yeah, I mean, things can still happen up till then that you can that will mold your decision.
Of course.
Forwards, trades, things like that.
But I mean, it's almost June. I mean, June is...
But Gojan Yev is right, so you're less worried about it. Hainsey, I assume they're going to trade eventually, or they're signing him back at cheaper. I'm assuming they're going to trade him. Enstrom is the wild card, Drew. And that's the question. Do you want to get forwards for him? What do you think about your offensive defense? Can Paul Postma take a step? And
I think he needs
some of those power play minutes. How good is Enstrom would even strengthen their opinion?
These are the questions. I mean,
how does he play without Bufflin as maybe a crutch beside him?
Who is your most?
There's many factors here.
Richie, who is your most right now? You have to throw Bufflin in there, but Enstrom has to be your most tradable asset when you want to get a first round pick.
Yes.
And that to me is how you're going to
more than that.
The Jets aren't going to go after Zach Parise. It's not going to happen. They're not going to.
They'll make some calls, I think.
Well, they'll make. Yeah. I mean, okay, maybe it's unrealistic to expect them to maybe win that, but with all the points have been Minnesota Wild are going to get them. But when you look at who the Jets could trade,
some say he'll stay in the East too. By the way,
I mean, right?
Yeah. Carolina supposedly has got big interest.
The Northeast,
in him.
Apparently likes the Northeast, but we'll see.
But I mean, that's the question. I mean, you have finite dollars, and the question is, how do you allocate them? I mean, you have Buff. Under contract,
it's got to be on the top line.
Do you maybe decide? Do you want? Can only build around so many defensemen that make $5 million a year.
Yep.
I mean,
of course.
And the question is, where do you want to allocate it?
The Jets had four of them this year before Oduya was traded.
That's to no fault of their own.
It wasn't five.
Well, not 5 million, but you had four plus or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they had a lot of
money tied up.
They had a ton of money.
As I wrote in that magazine this summer, the Jets annual magazine, the Jets had the highest amount of salary percentage-wise locked up in defensemen and the lowest amount of percentage-wise locked up in forwards.
Their forward group isn't great.
And then the forward group isn't great. And the defensive group does not warrant the most money in the National Hockey League percentage-wise of cap. It doesn't. I realize it's on the scale, so you spend less, etc. But even so, this defense is overpaid.
The new NHL is spending your money up the middle, at the center position.
Right.
Teams like the Sharks and the Hawks are showing that you do not need to spend a lot of money on your goaltender, Drew.
I know that. Right. And you're right. The money is being spent in centermen.
The Red Wings,
and the Jets, and that's why a big problem for the Jets right now is they don't have a number one centerman.
Well, there's other factors. Kane's an RFA. Pavlik's an RFA.
Yeah. Sure.
Those are the building blocks if you decide that those are the building blocks.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, Vander Kane's going to be a 30-goal scorer this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's going to score one
he's
more.
He's going to be a 40-goal scorer within a couple of years. Yeah. He was injured this year. He's got that talent.
Right. If he was healthy for the majority, all those games that he missed.
They wanted him to be a 40-goal scorer. He could have been, right? Because he missed some games in terms of injury, but they played him on the second line all year. They never gave him 5-on-3 time for the most part. They played him on the second power play unit. If they wanted him to be a 40-goal scorer, wouldn't have helped them in terms of, A, development, giving the guy everything too early, and B, contract status, because it wouldn't have to pay him more.
Yeah. Well, that'll be the interesting. I mean, he's an RFA, but he's an RFA with no leverage.
And I mean, you look at, the season's going to be over for the Jets in a week. Unfortunately, everyone, was hoping that they could get in the playoffs. I was at least because I had that prediction, which it's obviously going to be wrong. But you look at the season ending in a week, the playoffs starting, Chevy's got some work to do. He starts, and he starts preparing for the draft. And then you've got Evander Kane and Pavlik coming up as RFAs. I mean, those are some huge. Huge players that you're going to have to get under contract, and you're starting to build already for next year.
And it'll tell you a lot about the organizational philosophy. That's the biggest thing. To me, the signings this summer is going to tell us a lot about the organizational philosophy moving forward, especially with Kane and some of the supposed character issues, but more importantly, I think, how they treat the goaltending issue.
And that'll be interesting because you're right. They never had all they could do this past offseason was tinker with the bottom six and depth guys. So you don't know where they want to budget their money.
We'll be able to have a clearer picture of what this organization intends on doing and how they intend on molding the cap and their organization moving forward. We understand the character issue, but I'm talking more of the numbers.
it'll be interesting to find out, and we'll see as the summer progresses. And we'll be here all summer, so you don't have to go anywhere other than the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, I might go on a little vacation.
Okay, well, you won't be here all summer then. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here on TSN 1290. When we come back on the other side of these commercial messages, the Eastern Conference playoff race, we'll start breaking that down. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at the Cheer Bar and Grill, located in the heart of Osborne Village at Stradbrook and Osborne. Catch all of the home team's games on their numerous HD big screens. Ezzy, you and I were there last night. You're going to be there again tonight. Richie, you'll be there tonight. It was a good time last night at the Cheer Bar and Grill.
You're coming tonight, right?
Of course. It was a good time last night. And last night, the owner of the Cheer Bar and Grill, Brian, told us that tonight we're giving away a shuffleboard.
Good memory.
Ooh. That's right. We're giving away an entire shuffleboard table.
After all those beers, to remember that.
You have to be in attendance tonight at the Cheer Bar and Grill to win, but we are giving away a professional-sized shuffleboard table.
We've played on it.
And we played terribly on it, but that was more...
Well, we don't know what we're doing.
That was more of a function of us and the alcohol than it was anything about the table.
Well, and the thing is, Drew, someone told us that you're not supposed to slide your beer glasses down the... I didn't realize that there was actually rocks that you throw down.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and there's beer spilling everywhere. But once again, we're going to give away that shuffleboard table, and you can pick it up however you dispose of it.
No, you don't dispose of it. You pick it up.
Right. Well, yeah. I meant... you pick it up will be arranged. But
you have to be in attendance at the Cheer Bar and Grill tonight to win. The puck drop, of course, on the Jets game is 6 o'clock. Show up. Have some bevvies. It's a nice Saturday night. Lovely day outside. You know, walk over. Stroll on over to the village. You know, you can win a shuffleboard table.
Stroll on over to the village and hang out with the village idiots.
That's you and Ezzy in a nutshell. Now, Richie, we haven't discussed this with Ezzy, but are we doing win a date with Ezzy next Saturday?
Yep. That's part of our next contest.
Yeah. We'll get
Drew, why don't you preview it for the fans?
Well, we will...
I feel like this is like that episode of Seinfeld, like the Merv Griffin show. It's like, that's our next contest. It's like, but we don't have a real contest.
let's just top pitch it here.
We haven't quite figured out the details, but your suggestions, of course, are welcome on our Twitter page at Illegal Curve.
Yep.
But what we're going to give away, we will announce the winner next week, so you have all week to send in your suggestions.
Mm-hmm. Hold on, what's the contest?
Hold on.
Win a date with Ezzy.
Yeah, you're going to go on a date with somebody.
Yeah, we're going to send you.
Where's the contest aspect of it?
Well, somebody has to win that.
We're going
to
put...
That's all? You just win a date with me?
Yeah. Well, a night out with you is well worth the price of admission.
Where did we say it was going
to
be?
We're going to send them to Rumors.
Maybe I should get rid of the beard.
Yeah.
You're going to Rumors, you and the person who wins.
It could be man or woman. We're in an opportunity here.
Is there a nice dinner involved?
You have to pay for it.
Okay, I'll pay for it. Is there a dinner?
Well, they have food at Rumors.
Yes, right? Exactly. So we have to pay
for
the dinner.
It's a nice dinner and a show.
Yeah, dinner and a show and a date with Ezzy.
They just announced someone's coming to Rumors.
That's you and the date.
No, but who's the comedian that they just announced that's coming to Rumors? We'll have to find out, but I hope it's...
There's comedians at Rumors every day.
No, I know, but they announced someone that I've seen before at Rumors that I really like.
Well, anyways, send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. And, tell us why you think you deserve to win a date with Ezzy.
That's a good idea. There we go. Yeah.
Whoever wins...
Once in a while, Drew, you strike gold.
Exactly.
Can we eliminate people that we know, too?
No. Why do you...
I don't want it to be someone that I already
That's
know.
That's fair. It can't be in the circle.
Fine. That's right. You can't know...
It
can't be Remus. But
as long as it's not Remus, I'm fine.
Tell us why you think you should win a date with Ezzy, and we're going to... Illegal Curve is going to send you and Ezzy together, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club.
So just to clarify, do I have to pick the date up, or is there a limo? Like, what's the situation? Do I meet them there? It might creep someone out if I have to pick them up at their house.
That's okay. Your car doesn't smell like cigarettes.
We're going to figure out all the details, but the point is, send us your tweets at Illegal Curve.
Why do you deserve?
And why do you deserve to win a date with Ezzy?
Why do I deserve to be in this contest?
It's a fair point as well. Let's look at the Eastern Conference playoff.
Well, maybe because I haven't had a date in 5 years.
That'll do it.
It's been a dark winter. it's been a rough winter, Drew.
The Buffalo Sabres and the Washington Capitals are still neck and neck for that final Eastern Conference playoff spot.
Ezzy and the date aren't neck and neck.
Well,
if it goes well,
let's hope.
Okay, sorry.
Buffalo is currently in ninth.
This has international incident written all over it, by the way.
Buffalo is currently in ninth, despite having the same amount of points as Washington has the tiebreaker. Ottawa still, you know, Ottawa's 2 points ahead of them. Ottawa with the game in hand, and of course Ottawa is beating Philadelphia this afternoon 3-0 right now.
Oh, another break. Oh,
no, that's those are highlights.
Yeah, Ottawa's. We've been watching this. This game's been in the studio here. It's been quite a dominating performance by the Senators.
Let's look at Buffalo. Let's look at Washington, and let's look at the schedules. First of all, earlier this week, Buffalo went into Washington and embarrassed them.
Yep.
5-1 Buffalo over Washington.
Washington is getting by, Drew, strictly on talent. There's nothing else there. It's just talent.
Talent, but no heart, is what
That's
you're
right,
saying.
Yeah.
Looking ahead at Buffalo's schedule, it is not difficult by any stretch. They are at Toronto tonight. Not that much. Not that.
By the way, why don't you tell the listeners of what Carlisle was doing at practice today?
If you missed in Leafs practice, if you missed the net today on a shooting drill, you have to do push-ups. you think Randy Carlisle likes the roster he inherited?
Well, since February 6th, the Leafs, at that point in time, were 28-19-6. This is Pro Hockey Talk. Jason Breaux used to do the Orland Curtain blog.
Yeah.
And now he's writing there. 28-19-6. Since February 6th, in this day and age of all the three-point games, the Leafs have gone 5-17-3.
They haven't won on home ice, I think, since the new year. It's something like since February or something.
Well, last
they haven't won on home ice since the Reagan administration.
Last home game, they were chanting. The crowd was chanting,
"Let's go Blue Jays!
Let's go Blue Jays!"
Which is I totally agree with, by the way. Anyways, Buffalo scheduled home and home against Toronto, at Philly and at Boston next Saturday afternoon.
Right, and the Philly game will be hard, but the Leafs games are both winnable. What I have right now, this is what I'm going to look into my crystal ball.
Lord knows what's in there.
Which has a lot of disturbing things in it, by the way. But I got Buffalo winning 3 of 4, and then I've got Washington going 2-2.
Let's go through Washington's schedule.
Right. They've got the Habs tonight.
I'm going through it. That's why I'm the host.
Well, I've got it here too.
Yeah.
I also have the internet.
You don't actually in the studio. That's funny. You have it at home, but not in the studio. Washington plays Montreal. Then they play at Tampa Bay. Home to Florida and at the Rangers.
It's an easy schedule except for that last game. You don't know if the Rangers will be clinched in first by then and be playing Biron and some young guys.
But
it's an easy schedule.
Yeah, Buffalo
well, I
has.
Say it's easy. I would say that they're going to win 2 out of 4. I mean, you got the Panthers. That's not an easy win.
It's not a hard win.
If you look at Buffalo's schedule, I'd say Buffalo's schedule is harder than Washington's. Granted, though, Boston.
How so?
Well, because I think that...
They've got Toronto twice. They win both of those games.
Yeah.
They should.
And you have Boston and Philly.
Okay, so two hard games and two easy games.
Right.
And so you've got the Canadiens, easy game. Lightning, easy game. The Rangers and Panthers, you've got...
So cancel out the easy games. It's a lot easier to play against Florida and a Rangers team that has nothing to play for than it is to play against the Flyers and the Bruins.
The Sabres are trailing by a point.
That's right.
In theory.
Because the Sabres need to finish clear ahead of Washington because of the tiebreaker situation. Now, you look at the factor that the Sabres care and the Capitals don't, and I mean, it's blunt, but it's pretty straightforward there. I mean, Washington does not... You don't lose 5-1 on home ice and then tell me you cared about that game.
Yeah, they have so many flaws, Drew. Even if they get in, the Rangers are gonna beat them.
Drew, the Washington Capitals... Maybe not months ago, six weeks ago, had a chance to separate themselves and really take over that eighth spot and maybe even make a run for, an Ottawa. Remember, Ottawa was struggling, but they picked up their game. And the Washington Capitals did not take advantage. There's no reason why the Washington Capitals should not have separated themselves from the Buffalo Sabres. They had the opportunities, and what they've done is they've kind of played 500 hockey and... They're in this position where Buffalo has a very good chance. If they beat the Leafs here twice and they get into a position where they're up a point on the Capitals, they could take the Eastern Conference. And then the Capitals, who made all of those signings in the offseason, aren't even going to make the playoffs. And then you really have problems.
Which of those two teams do you trust more in a must-win game?
Buffalo.
Of course. It's not even a comparison. You've seen no evidence. I mean, Buffalo's tanked at the beginning of the year. Terrible. And they've gone on this insane run since then because, ultimately they have talent and they have professional pride.
Again, I've talked about this show many times. Tyler Ennis's return from ankle injury has been as important as any other thing that's happened. And obviously Ryan Miller's first and foremost, but Tyler Ennis has been arguably their best forward over the past 15 games.
And you've never seen anything that tells you regarding the Washington Capitals that they have pride to win a game that might be a little bit tough.
Yeah. You know, when you three or four times a year, you have leaders coming up and saying we didn't show like we cared. I mean, there's so many issues in that room. Yeah. Now, Drew, again, if they squeeze in, they're losing to the Rangers anyways. There's no magic horse that they're hopping on and making a run.
No. They're out.
It's not like the Knicks, you know, that they squeeze in the eighth seed that year, like that kind of team, and they kind of make a run. No. I agree with you, Drew. There's nothing underneath the.
But the Buffalo Sabres in the eighth spot will give the New York Rangers they'll give them a contest in that first round.
Yes, they will.
That'll be a 6 or 7 game series.
And Drew, you're looking at the two teams, the Buffalo Sabres and the Washington Capitals. And okay, you know, you made a good argument. The Capitals might have a slightly easier schedule, but really, it doesn't matter. It's going to come down to wins.
Buffalo,
whoever wins.
Buffalo, you know, thinking about it, Buffalo does match up quite well with the Rangers in that they have this offensive depth. Rangers defense at the back end, you know, meaning like 4, 5, 6 kind of thing, more 5, 6, but. You can kind of work them over, but you can get some matchups that you like. Buffalo, I mean, the Rangers don't have that much offensive depth. Maybe Buffalo's back end isn't great. Great goalies. Yeah, you know what? That's not a great matchup for the Rangers. The Rangers can handle Washington. The Rangers, I bet you, are clearly hoping for Washington to get the 8th seed because Buffalo will give them a lot more problems.
And they'll play with some professional pride.
The matchup-wise.
It'll be interesting to watch it unfold over the course of the next week, that's for sure. I mean, they play tonight, and they play Tuesday and Thursday. And Washington plays tonight, Monday and Thursday. So by next Saturday, we should have a pretty good idea as to what's going to happen in the Eastern Conference playoff race. Let's go to break. When we come back, the Western Conference playoff race. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and the Lothario himself, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. Be sure to tweet us and tell us why you deserve to win a date with Ezzy. We'll send you on a date with Ezzy. So, at Illegal Curve on Twitter, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is www.illegalcurve.com. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day here. On TSN 1290, the Jets and the Tampa Bay Lightning will take to the ice at the Tampa Times Forum coming up at 6 o'clock tonight.
It used to be the St. Pete Times Forum. It changed over this year.
Yes, I know. Thank you. Hustler and Lawless follow us at 3 o'clock. I think Hustler has made his flights. Do we know if he's successfully, you know, he had a little trouble yesterday in Carolina getting there. I assume he was able to get from Carolina to Tampa correctly. We'll find out coming up in a couple hours. Rick Ralph in the official Jets pregame show at 5, and then Brian Munns, Dennis Bayak, and Shane Knighty have the call for you 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290. Let's shift our focus over to the Western Conference playoff race. And this is a more open playoff race in the sense that...
More teams involved.
Yeah, there's more teams involved. You really look at it, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4 teams battling for the final... 3 playoff spots, you know, because what you have is the Pacific Division. All of those 4 teams are Pacific Division teams, and they're all battling for the Pacific Division lead as well. As it currently stands, we have the Los Angeles Kings at 90 points. They're in third position in the Western Conference. Then you look down to 7, 8, 9, and you have 1 point that separates Dallas, Phoenix, and San Jose, and all the teams have played the same number of games.
It's gonna be very close. You look at, we've talked about the San Jose Sharks, and I believe we're gonna play that audio that we talked about before. But you know, the San Jose Sharks, I think, have maybe the biggest mountain to climb. But they've got a game tonight against the Dallas Stars, and then they've got another game coming up against the Dallas Stars on Tuesday. So you've got back to backs, not back to back nights, but 2 games against the Stars, and then you've got 2 games against the LA Kings, who are in third place for now. But they've got Dallas and Phoenix right behind them. And right now, I mean, I don't like the San Jose Sharks. And I mean, the way I look at it right now, the teams that are in now, it's going to stay that way with possibly Phoenix or Dallas going into the third spot. But right now, San Jose, you got to win 3 out of 4 of those games against the Stars and the Kings. And that's not going to be easy, Richie.
No, you're right. And you may have to win more than that. I mean... 2 weeks ago, I said I thought that San Jose, L.A., and Dallas would make it. Right now, it's L.A., Dallas, and Phoenix.
Yep.
Colorado's done.
And Calgary's done.
Calgary's done. So it's a matter of, you know, which team's on the inside out, on the outside looking in, excuse me. Right now, Phoenix is in the driver's seat, obviously, they have, in terms of versus San Jose. And obviously Dallas and Phoenix are in the same situation with LA hanging around there. But with all teams having played the same amount of games, that helps us kind of have a better idea of what's going on. But San Jose had these games in hand. They squander them. If you watch them play, they play with no desperation, no seemingly no intention of pumping up. And you know, that's a we talk about it, you know, turning on the switch. Is that possible? Who knows? San Jose is showing that it really isn't, at least in this instance here. But you have a team now, San Jose, where you don't control your own destiny, although I don't know how you can control destiny, but that's for another day.
Yeah.
But they don't control what's going to happen to them in terms of the playoffs, because right now, if they run the table, now I guess these teams play each other, so I guess that math would work itself out. But when you're a point behind with four games left and you don't have the regulation tiebreaker, you lose it to L.A., and you lose it to Dallas.
Well, let's
Phoenix
go
depends
go,
on what happens.
Let's
I mean,
go through the regulation wins.
Okay. Regulation and overtime wins, sorry.
Yeah. Well, no, the regulation wins.
And overtime wins. That's what the set is. It's no shootouts.
Oh, that's pardon me. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Dallas currently leads there. They have 35 regulation time wins.
Mm-hmm.
Los Angeles is next, 33.
Yes.
Then Phoenix at 32, and San Jose at 31. So San Jose has absolutely no tiebreakers going for them right now.
So if you're San Jose, you cannot. There's only four games left. You can't catch Dallas.
Right.
Because for those two things to happen, you wouldn't, you know, you would be past them. Already.
You can't catch them in regulation.
That's
wins.
What I'm saying. You can't catch them in regulation wins.
But if they win in Dallas,
but add another point on there though, Drew.
That's right. They have to clearly right. be. They have to be, you know, 2 or 3 points.
The Kings too. You're likely not going to catch them in regulation wins. So I mean, are you 2-3 points back in some of these cases? You know, again, to me, with the regulation wins as they are with Dallas. Now, give me San Jose's schedule again.
Sure. Hang on. Let me just pull
San
that.
San Jose's up. Got Dallas twice coming up. And then they've got the L.A. Kings twice
yeah.
after that.
Home and homes against both Dallas and Los
on
Angeles.
On paper, it looks like Phoenix is the best team for them to catch, although they just lost to Phoenix. But when they play Dallas and L.A. twice, those are the two teams that they obviously have the best chance because they can control that more. Unfortunately for them, they lose these regulation wins. So they basically almost have to sweep. They have to win 3 or 4 minimum, if not more. It's difficult. I mean, I'm not sure what Sports Club Stats has them at. Remus can tell us that, but if you look at it and you look at San Jose on talent, I pick San Jose, LA, Dallas, Ezzy, but you look at San Jose and you look at their, forget the talent for a second, you look at their effort level and the way they've played, it's hard for me to continue supporting this team.
Well, why isn't San Jose getting the criticism that the Washington Capitals are getting?
Because they're in the West.
Is that strictly a geographic thing?
It's not as big of a market and there's no Ovechkin.
Well, but you gotta, I mean... Yeah, I guess Ovechkin's probably the second biggest name in there.
I like to play that clip with Ratto.
Remus is pulling it up.
Okay.
I think
Drew, you know...
It's not the whole back and forth. The back and forth is a little long. It's Drew Remenda's 30, 40-second rant about the team.
As far as the disappointment level or the level of disappointment, I guess.
Yeah.
Same thing. I think it's equal. I mean, the San Jose Sharks, and we talked to Drew Remenda about this too, I mean... The future of that team is looking like it's going to be Logan Couture. And you know, Joe Thornton has quietly still had a good season. But,
yes,
yeah, but
yes.
right now, Drew, it's the exact same level of disappointment. And for the San Jose Sharks to have to basically either sweep out or at least, at the very least, sweep one of the LA Kings or the Dallas Stars to make the playoffs,
yeah.
That's a really hard thing to
that's
do
right.
at this point
that's
in the season.
Right.
And for them to be in that position... is absolutely shocking.
And they had all these extra games that they just squandered.
Yeah.
They had all these games in hand. If they had won those games in hand, they'd be ahead of everybody.
That was what we were waiting on. We were like, okay, let's
that's
not,
why I thought they would be in there.
There's
yeah.
no reason to worry about San Jose
and
because they
have
their
talent level is so high, Drew. Like, top to bottom.
At that loss, Richie, on Wednesday, you lose 3-1 to the Anaheim Ducks, and it's just that might
we
be...
We caught a bit of that game.
That might be the killer.
Well, count the number of times that
they shut out by Phoenix.
Yep.
Yeah. Like if you're a San Jose fan, you have to be pulling your hair out. And there's this team. And that the question is, what?
They lost to Anaheim twice in the past 2 weeks.
But it's like, who's ever picking this team to make the finals anymore? It's the same team that always chokes. Now they just choked a little earlier.
So do they have to blow it up?
You don't blow it up.
Well, what do you do? What do you do to make the San Jose Sharks an upper echelon team?
That's a great question.
Well, let's
no, that's a whole. That, give me that for another show.
You have to, Drew. At the very least, you have to reevaluate some of the veterans that you've got on
yes,
the top.
I agree with
line.
That.
Here's the audio of Drew Remenda. Drew Remenda was on this program last week. Yeah. Here's the audio. This is a post game for one of the Sharks games this week. Just really, he's the play-by-play guy, so he knows the team better than anybody else.
He's a color guy.
Pardon me, he's the color guy. Yeah, color guy. He knows
Randy
the team.
Randy Hahn's the play-by-play.
This is after the Phoenix loss, I believe.
After the Phoenix loss.
In Phoenix and one goal to show for it.
I don't want to get an argument over here as Ray's in San Francisco and I'm here, but I saw a Sharks team who was trying to win. And it's easy to say, just go win the game. Well, what the heck do you think they were trying to do out there, Ray? That's exactly what they were trying to do. They were out there with a game plan. They came out and established their game. They went out and worked hard. I agree with Brett. They weren't great, but they were good. They did a lot of things in order to try to win that hockey game. To just say, well, go out and win the game, and you're don't deserve to be a playoff team. You haven't won this amount of games. Baloney. You deserve to be a playoff game at the end of 82 games if you've got enough points to be there. It's easy to sit back and analyze, and, you know, the game is easy from where we sit. But I think you're disrespecting the Sharks when you say, listen, just go out and win the game. That's exactly what they tried to do.
All right.
That was Drew Remenda. He was counterpointing Ray Rotto.
And that's courtesy of Comcast Sports.
Yeah, he was counterpointing Ray Rotto.
I was going to say, Ray Rotto basically went on the air before and said, these guys aren't trying. They're not a playoff team. They should be in third, but they're, you know, not barely eighth. And then Drew, you know, flipped his lid there.
Yeah.
Drew Remenda.
I have one thing to say. If the Sharks had the passion that Drew Remenda does, they wouldn't be sitting in ninth right now.
Yeah, look, I know it's difficult to play against the Phoenix Coyotes because the Coyotes bog down the game and make it as boring as possible.
Nobody's there and nobody cares. So that is a part of the atmosphere, is that nobody really cares what's happening. So you're in an empty arena, the team that's owned by the league, playing against the most boring system in the National Hockey League. And yeah, it's hard to get up for, but it shouldn't be hard to get up for when you have something to play for.
You have to win the game. I mean, that's, you know, almost what it boils down to, is that you can't afford to lose these games you had in hand. And exactly. Now the Sharks are going to be in a life or death battle just to make it to the finals. I'll tell you what, if I'm the St. Louis Blues or the Vancouver Canucks at the top of the Western Conference, I want the San Jose team to be nothing.
No. You don't want to play them.
You don't want to play them in the first round.
So still, at the end of the day, they still have far more talent and can beat St. Louis as opposed to although for fans' sake, as if Phoenix plays St. Louis, you might as well just wake me up when the series is over.
It's unwatchable hockey. If San Jose manages to get the eighth and playoff spot, mm-hmm. you're exactly right, because they're able to they've gotten to the playoffs by beating the LA Kings and the Dallas Stars. One of those two teams will be in the playoffs. If not both of them. So if San Jose is, you know, just to look at it like glass half full, mm-hmm. it doesn't look good for the Sharks right now. But if they can make the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. They will have earned it.
They will have earned it. And then you're playing a St. Louis team that doesn't like looking down the middle at Joe Thornton and Logan Couture and mm-hmm. looking at all these guys, Marty Havlat, you know,
Podolsky,
Dan Boyle.
Chloe,
You don't want to play them. You don't want to play the San Jose Sharks if they get it.
And then the hard issue aside, and then that's been an issue for San Jose forever, and Joe Thornton's been the leader, and I've never been the biggest Joe Thornton fan. He seems like the nicest guy out there. Never been the biggest fan. But the one other thing to take into account here, guys, is their defense isn't great. And it's never been great. And you talk about the other issue. I know they bring in Brent Burns. He's come into his own a little bit. If you watch him, though, he hasn't been great defensively. I don't think he's skating as well as he was before. You have Dan Boyle's getting up there a bit in age. Vlasic's a beautiful skater. Guys like Justin Braun, Jason Demers can really move the puck well, but they get a little bit too aggressive in the offensive zone. Douglas Murray is a heart and soul warrior back there. He doesn't move that well. I mean, this isn't a defensive corps as the Detroit Red Wings have, mm-hmm. you know, or the Chicago Blackhawks have. And so, you know, the heart issue is one thing. And, you know, Niemi hasn't been great in the goaltending issue. And, you know, they have a lot of issues, Marleau and Pavelski, all that. But also in terms of the on the production, I think the flaw in the Sharks throughout has been that hard issue, but it also has been that defense issue. Mm-hmm. I don't think they've played really. They've played teams where they've ever feel like they have a considerable advantage on the back end. And if you look at some of the teams who've made big runs here in the past few years, or forever really, that back end is a staple.
Certainly, yeah.
Who's filled Rob Blake's void there?
I was going to say
Rob Blake retired. But Rob Blake, one of the best defensemen of all time, maybe not of all time, but he's a top 20 defenseman of all time.
I was going to say that defense hasn't been exactly the same since Rob Blake retired.
Right.
And Rob Blake was on the downside of his career when he was there. So
still getting it done, though.
Yeah, he was still getting it down. Update from Philadelphia before we go to break. Philly has gotten on the Ottawa over Philadelphia. Wayne Simmonds scored, I believe, off of his face.
So, you know, way to give 110%.
Hey, Drew, if you can score off your head or face in soccer, why not in hockey, right?
Well, it hurts a little bit more than a soccer ball.
That's true.
Okay, let's leave it there. Yep. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A reminder, Monday, the McPhillips Toyota Coaches Summit, a Hustler and Lawless special, gets underway at 1 o'clock from 1 to 3, 2 hours exclusively with head coach of the Winnipeg Jets, Claude Noel, and members of his coaching staff, live from Sunrise, Florida. It's the McPhillips Toyota Coaches Summit, an H&L special, also brought to you in part by MTS and Princess Auto. So be sure to stay tuned to TSN 1290 for that coming up on Monday. Of course, Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day today. Jets Lightning gets underway at 6 o'clock, live from Tampa Bay.
Interesting that's Princess Auto, because you've been on autopilot all day, Drew.
Yeah, that wasn't very... No, that was pretty weak.
Well, you had to set her on it, so I had time to think about it.
And that's the best you came up with?
It's like 2 seconds.
Yeah, I would have left it.
Well, here comes the other question we were talking about yesterday.
Great question. Yeah. Aaron Portsline.
If somebody can get that answer, then we'll...
Let's do a little... Do we have some rumors tickets?
Yeah, we can give it out.
We'll give away some rumors tickets, maybe. Do we have some illegal curve toques? Good question here. This is what we'll do. Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch tweeted this. Drew and I were...
Except people might go to a...
Hold on. Hold on.
Contest over.
Yeah, that was a bad contest. You ruined it, Ezzy.
But you can still get a date with Ezzy.
Yeah.
Talk about the Habs.
Okay, let's talk about the Habs. What I was going to say was that the answer to the question is available on Aaron Portsline's Twitter. The question was... which 5 players since the lockout have had more than 10 goals and 200 penalty minutes in one season?
And the answers were?
The answers were Chris Neal of the Ottawa Senators.
Daniel Carcillo
of the Blackhawks now. It was
Steve Downey.
Steve Downey of
Sean
the Colorado Avalanche now. Sean Avery of the Vogue magazine?
Yeah, Vogue magazine.
Yeah.
And Derek Dorsett.
Derek Dorsett's the one that nobody would ever get.
Right.
No, none of us got that.
You only got 3 out of the 5, and if you only can get 3 out of 5, Richie, I know it was a
forgetting the Downey one was really bad on my part. I'm not saying I wouldn't have got Dorsett, but the Downey I should have got.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was a little embarrassed to say I knew you when you only got 3 out of 5. Also, anyway,
I'm an embarrassment.
Yeah, well, only somewhat of an embarrassment.
Let's talk Habs.
Okay, let's talk Habs. The Habs removed Pierre Gauthier as the general manager earlier this week. We're going to be joined by Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette coming up in 10 minutes to talk about that. The question really I have for you guys is, what took so long?
That is the question I wonder too, Drew, and we're going to ask Pat about that because you... Basically, the writing was on the wall for Pierre Gauthier. Once he fired Martin, they weren't doing anything, and he hired Cunnyworth, and clearly that wasn't well thought out beforehand because the language issue was so, you know, prominent in the Montreal media and all over Quebec, frankly. And then you allow him to trade Spachek for Thomas Cavalier's long-term, 3-year deal.
2 years now, but yeah.
2 years left, but nobody wanted that contract. And Jim Rutherford said as much, allowing him to trade Mike Camilleri, allowing him to trade Hal Gill. I'm not saying any of these trades, the Cavalier trade was awful. They're not saying the other trades were awful. But you're allowing a guy to mold your organization moving forward when you know he's not going to be there. So you know he's not, as far as we know, you know he's not going to be there and you want to get rid of him. Why would you then allow him to form the team moving forward? I just don't get it. I mean, wouldn't you want a guy, and maybe Molson was overseeing everything by talking to somebody else. Who knows? But it just seems
the owner of the and president of the Montreal Canadiens.
Just seems like an odd decision to me.
Well, I mean, yeah, the
decision to fire Gauthier was overdue, and he needed to go. He did a pretty poor job. He didn't do himself any favors either. And
you can't take. He didn't speak to the media in Montreal for 3 or 4 months. And look, if we've seen anything in Winnipeg, it's that a general manager can speak to the media. Mm-hmm. He can speak to the media every day and not say anything.
Exactly.
And Kevin Cheveldayoff is very good at that.
Yeah.
Kudos to him for being that good at that. I don't think he owes. I mean, I'd rather have a GM that doesn't really say anything. But you have to make an effort.
You have to make appearances, as it's said, and you know
the GM that does that best as he is Ken Holland, because he says something about the game, but he won't give you inside info about his team.
Right, and the thing is, you might not expect whether it's Ken Holland or Kevin Cheveldayoff to give info, but you want him to have a presence and to talk about his team. I mean, the coach is obviously, you know, the main general, if you will, on the bench. But the GM, you're right, Richie, he's the architect of the team. And you can go down the list and, you know, sure, the signing of Eric Cole turned out to be good, but the coaching decision, go back to Perry.
The issue is not what he does this year. It's why is there a long-term deal on that? Why is there a fourth year?
Right. And you go back to the Perry Pern decision that we were very critical of with Jacques Martin. Mm-hmm. And I'll continue to say it. I mean, Jacques Martin is a very good coach, and he got the Montreal Canadiens very far in the playoffs a couple of years back.
With a flawed roster.
Mm-hmm. And the problems that they have, and I thought, I've got it up here on my screen, and Eric Duhatchik had a great article, good friend of the show, about, you know, whether it's Claude Loisel or Julien Brisebois or Patrick Waugh. I mean, the problems in Montreal are, it's long-term, and I mean, this team's not going to be good next year.
I don't think that you have some good building blocks there. I think it's a pretty, aside from the fact that it's Montreal Canadiens' the most storied franchise in hockey, I think it's an appealing gig. I do.
You walk into a...
Oh, I'm not saying it's appealing.
Look,
I'm just...
they have some appeal.
It's a tough job.
You walk into the job and you have Carey Price, one of the top five goaltenders in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have P.K. Subban, a tremendous young defenseman that needs a little bit more seasoning, maybe a little bit more maturity, but has all the talent in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thomas Plekanec's a nice piece.
Mechanic, you got Pacioretty looking really good.
You take the Montreal Canadiens job over the Toronto Maple Leafs job any day of the week
now. You got Bork and Cole on long-term deals, but they're not useless players by any means.
Yeah.
You have Louis LeBlanc coming through the system now.
Bork has one goal since he was acquired for Cavalry.
But, you know, and then he's not going to kill your capital.
He's making $3.3 million. It's tolerable.
Yeah, and then you're going to, you have a guy like Louis LeBlanc who's proving himself. Alexei Yemelin is coming up, who's come up and played quite well.
Yeah.
You know, Diaz and the younger guys. So you have young pieces here, and you're gonna have maybe a top three pick this year. So and there's worse with a team that'll spend a boatload of money. And Gomez is coming off the cap, I believe, after next year.
After 2013-2014.
Oh, so after 2 years.
Two more years.
But there might be an amnesty in the CBA. Whatever it may be.
You're
gonna spend to the cap. You're gonna have 22,000 people there every game. This is a heck of a job, and it's not like you're going into Toronto right now.
No, Toronto's a far bigger mess right now than Montreal is. A far bigger mess. It's interesting in Montreal, if there is an amnesty, you see it in the NBA, they have an amnesty generally when they in their new CBA when you can get rid of one guy off your books.
Which
for
I hate, by the way.
I think I hate it too. It doesn't
make
any sense.
Hold people accountable for what they did.
But who would you get rid of if you're Montreal? Would you get rid of Markov's $5.75 million?
Isn't he only on one? He's on
2013-2014. Or would you get rid of Gomez's $7.3 million?
You still get rid of Gomez.
I think
because
so.
Because he's useless.
But, I mean, look, if you want to, Pierre Gauthier can be fired strictly for the Andrei Markov signing.
Well, we didn't mention that also, and nobody understood that. We talked to Pat about that months. This is like 6 months ago. We talked to Pat. Why would he sign him to that deal knowing the knee issues? Yeah. Nobody knows.
Because he's a bad GM.
Yeah, and he is. And you know what has he done?
Nothing. I mean, you look at that roster, not a lot that's on
that. In Montreal, he hasn't done much good, if any. He deserved to go.
How much blame do you think Bob Gainey deserved? Bob Gainey was also dismissed.
Bob Gainey acquired Gomez.
I know. Bob Gainey was also dismissed from his advisory position.
We had Al Strachan on the show. He said that, you know, Bob Gainey was going through some terrible tragedy. His daughter died on that ship. But he's gone through some terrible tragedies in his life. And he made some decisions he probably regret. I think Bob Gainey in charge of that organization would have been in a lot better hands than Pierre Gauthier.
Yep.
But Gainey needed to step back, and you know it's not going to tarnish his legacy. Gainey,
no.
He won a cup in Dallas after the fact, and you know what? And he had the Habs in first place about 4 years ago, first in the Eastern Conference during the regular season. Obviously, won the five cups as a player, one of the best two-way forwards, if not the best of all time. So you know he went through some hard times at the end here, but. Like it's not like the guy forgot how to build a hockey team.
I'd still take Bob Gainey. Yeah, if you need somebody to run some ideas off of, you can do a lot worse than Bob Gainey if you're at NHL.
And I'm sure he'll come up as an advisor somewhere. Is he?
Yeah, and that's fine. And now you've got Jeff Molson has said that Serge Savard, you're my man. You're going to help me find my GM. And the problem that I had is Bob Gainey was the general manager for the Habs, I believe, for 4 years, 5 years.
It's hard to say. He bounced back and forth.
Four or five years, and then Pierre Gauthier comes in. And now Bob Gainey steps down, and he was advising. And a lot of these issues that have come up, as far as I'm concerned, exactly, wouldn't have happened if he had more, and by he I mean Pierre Gauthier had more of a long-term vision. I mean, the decision to trade Camilleri for Rene Bork, and then the timing of firing Jacques Martin, and then, again, you go back to Perry Pern. I mean, just not very well thought out long-term decisions.
Let me ask you this question. Two-part question. First of all, the best comment...
Gainey became GM in 2003.
One-word answer, and I think I know the answer, and your thoughts on... I mean, Gary, we love you, but that John Ferguson Jr. article came out of left field.
Yeah, John Ferguson Jr. is going to be held accountable for the Toronto tenure.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a very good tenure. I mean, he didn't have much success, if any at all. Paid his dues in St. Louis before, as Gary mentioned, worked in San Jose with, you know, Dougie Wilson. And I think what John Ferguson Jr.'s crack at back in management will be as an assistant GM somewhere, working his way back through to be a general manager. But I don't think he's going to get dropped in to be a GM. I think he'll be dropped in to be an assistant GM next. That's his next move, and he's going to have to work his way back up. I don't think it's going to be a quick, and especially you don't drop him into Montreal.
No. And the best comment came from our friend Bruce Dowbig in the Globe and Mail, who said, why didn't the Canadians fire Pierre Gauthier between the second and third periods?
That was a great comment.
That's funny.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette is going to join us. You're listening to Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.